thing as being too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
Shalom, and welcome to the Too Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is Aaron Lieberman, founder of the educational nonprofit Jumpstart and entrepreneurial founder of Acelero Learning. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio programs and podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. Purim's coming up this Wednesday night and Thursday, and it's time to get ready for it. So what does that exactly mean? While Purim's the silliest of all Jewish holidays, and in many ways the most fun, it's often neglected by adults as being just a kid's festival. That's a shame, because the truth is that we need our religious life to be both meaningful and fun, if not always at the same time. Judaism's always understood this and has incorporated into its annual calendar both the overwhelming seriousness of Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, and the ridiculous frivolity of Purim, the Feast of Esther. And in a subtle way, it's chosen to make them polar opposites, twin festivals almost exactly 6 months apart, you know, half a year, with completely reversed traditions and practices. The parallels, or rather the reversals, are fascinating. Beginning with their placement on the calendar, they include food, dress, music, and tone. On Yom Kippur, we fast. On Purim, we feast. On Yom Kippur, we are supposed to be deeply serious, while on Purim, we are to revel and be as silly as possible. On Yom Kippur, we dress all in white, while on Purim, we dress in costumes of every color and construction. On Yom Kippur, we pray all day. On Purim, we perform plays and parodies, have carnivals and celebrations, play games of chance. On Yom Kippur, we are not supposed to drink at all, not even water. On Purim, we are commanded to drink alcohol ad delo yada, until we can't tell the difference between the evil Haman and the good Mordechai. On Yom Kippur, there is music of great power and sanctity, kol nidre. On Purim, there is, oh, today we'll merry, merry be, and other such silliness. If holidays were human beings, Yom Kippur would be Mother Teresa. Purim would be Charlie Sheen. These holidays couldn't be any more different, and both be Jewish. Yet, oddly, the mystics saw in Purim a kind of similarity to Yom Kippur. They noted that Yom Kippur is called in Hebrew Yom HaKippurim, which can be translated as the day like Purim. And not only Kabbalists saw it that way, mystics, so did the noted anti-mystic, the Vilna Gaon. The reasoning of these great minds on the subject is certainly complex. One rabbi wrote, "We would assume Yom Kippur is the greater of the 2 days, but in one sense, Purim is even greater. It's easier to achieve spiritual elevation on a day like Yom Kippur, when we pray and have no time for forbidden activities like gossip or getting angry. By fasting, the soul achieves dominance over the body. But on Purim, in our state of rambunctious drunkenness, it's much harder to maintain our human dignity." No kidding. As Rabbi Eliyahu Kitov writes, "If one attains holiness through affliction, and another attains holiness through indulgence, who's the greater of the two? It may be said that the one who attains holiness through indulgence is greater, for the attainment of holiness through indulgence requires an infinitely greater striving of effort. In this way, the challenge of Purim is greater. Literally translated, Yom HaKippurim is only a day like Purim." Okay, frankly, I don't buy it. To me, Purim is much more a reflection that human beings need humor and joy at least as much as they need serious introspection. Purim teaches us that even the Holy Blessed One likes a good party now and then. Like all the other springtime festivals, whether we call them Mardi Gras, Spring Fling, Carnival, or Rodeo, Purim is a lot of fun, a great way to usher in the end of winter with a wild, over-the-top, rambunctious celebration. Inhibitions are out, and revelry, for one night and day at least, is in. It's as though we've been good for so long we have to let down our hair, change our clothes, really celebrate. There's a famous 9-word summary for every Jewish festival from Hanukkah through Purim to Pesach. They tried to kill us, we survived, let's eat. On Purim we add, and drink. Pure, irresponsible fun, right? But you know, there is also something more profound going on at Purim than just a good, unwholesome time. There's a famous joke that says on Purim we dress up and pretend to be non-Jews, while on Yom Kippur we dress up and pretend to be Jews. Purim reminds us that Judaism, our own Judaism, your own Judaism, can be, should be, enjoyable and meaningful, that being Jewish is a gift, a blessing, and a rollicking good time. So no matter how old or young you are, if you have or don't have kids, come to Purim this year. It's Wednesday evening, March 16th. My own congregation, Beit Simcha, here in Tucson, will revel in a wild, raucous, fun, kid-friendly Megillah reading, complete with costumes for adults and kids, spectacularly delicious hamantaschen pastries, kid-friendly fun and special beverages for adults, and all the joy that comes on Purim for this festival of absolute celebration, which we get to do in person. There is another element to Purim. We Jews have been dealing with anti-Semitism for a very long time, and perhaps the most innovative approach we have taken has been to celebrate our victories over it in delightful ways. Perhaps the three most enjoyable Jewish holidays of all are Hanukkah, Purim, and Passover, which fall on our calendar from December through April. Purim comes in the middle, and it is the holiday most clearly about celebrating the triumph of Jewish survival over our enemies and oppressors. So this year, don't skip Purim. Celebrate it fully this Wednesday and Thursday. To play us in this morning as part of our pre-Purim musical preview, here's a delightful little tune from the Sephardic Jews of Sarajevo, a community that knew a great deal about anti-Semitism and yet still celebrates Purim with the song Empasara Kontar, performed by the Voice of the Turtle Sephardic Music Group. That was Empasar a Contar, the story of Purim in song from the Sephardic Jews of Sarajevo, for Purim coming up Wednesday and Thursday, March 16th and 17th. Join the traditional Megillah reading. Super fun this Wednesday night, March 16th at 6:30 p.m. at my own congregation, Beit Simcha, or on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. We'll have homemade hamantaschen, adult beverages, riotous fun, costumes, mass, Boo Haman, cheer Mordechai and Esther, lots of marvelous celebration. Don't miss it. Our guest this morning is Aaron Lieberman, founder of the extraordinary educational nonprofit Jumpstart. He started in his dorm room in college, and the entrepreneurial founder of Oscillero Learning, who has done so much for education in America and Arizona in particular. Meet Aaron Lieberman when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson. Enterprise of the Pascua-Yaqui Tribe.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish our guest this morning. Aaron Lieberman is an extraordinarily accomplished man. Even while in college, he began to see challenges in the way education works in America, created a remarkable organization that he'll talk about, and then went on to become a very successful business entrepreneur in developing educational programs that have helped, I guess millions might be high, but maybe not. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Hey, thank you so much for having me on. It's great to be here.
So tell us a little bit about, first of all, how your Jewish background influenced you into your focus on education initially.
Well, for me, the kind of idea of Tikkun Olam has kind of been the animating, force in my life. The just the basic point that we're here to make things better. And that I'm not exactly sure why or where it came out of, but pretty much every day of my career I got up thinking, how can I do something today to make the world a better place? And I was really fortunate, both of the organizations I founded and led, I had an incredible opportunity to do that every single day.
So you grew up in Arizona initially, and eventually went to college, as a lot of us do, and you helped found Jumpstart. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I started it out of my college dorm room my senior year at Yale, and the goal was to train college students to work one-on-one with preschoolers. I had actually worked at a Jewish Federation-sponsored camp in upstate New York that served low-income kids and families, and tried to take that idea. They had actually a special program for preschoolers and move it right into the communities where the kids live and really involve the families as partners. And what started with 15 kids in New Haven, Connecticut, has spread all across the United States. 50,000 college students have now served as Jumpstart Corps members, working with over 100,000 preschoolers.
So it's an amazing accomplishment. Did you think when you guys started this in your dorm room at Yale that it would, grow to be anything like what it has become?
Absolutely not. Really had no idea. A lot of life is timing. And as I shared, each day I was really focused on what can we do to do a better job today for the children and families that we serve. Part of that was always figuring out how can we grow to impact more. When I would hear parents come to me and say, wow, this is like a different child than the kid who started this program 3 months ago. He's doing great in his preschool classroom now. He's excited about books. And that type of feedback with energy, to figure out, okay, how can we do more of this? How can we do more of this? How can we do more of this? But I never really had any idea how large it would grow.
We will hear more about Jumpstart, but also about what you did afterwards, serving in the government in Arizona, from Aaron Lieberman. We come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. Congregation Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, wonderful Jewish synagogue in northwest Tucson, Catalina Foothills, celebrates a great array of services, classes, festivals, and events this spring. Established by passionate, caring congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha has already created a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. New Progressive Congregation in Northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everyone throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services Friday night and Saturday morning, Youth and Adult Education Academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675. Beit Simcha Synagogues at 2270 West Ina Road, north side of Ina, just west of La Cholla, near the entrance to the Foothills Mall property in our own building. Services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Join us Friday night, Saturday morning, or any of our classes. Email me, rabbi@BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. You can also join us every Friday night on our Facebook page. Shabbat evening celebration services are at 6:30 p.m. Saturday Shabbat morning services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. Facebook page is Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimchaTucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are live and on Zoom. You can access those through the website, BeitSimchaTucson.org. Our wonderful religious school, Torah Tikes program, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs are all available in person and on Zoom. Join us this Wednesday night, March 16th, 6:30 p.m. for our fabulous Purim Megillah reading and party. For more about Beit Simcha, to come to our classes, enroll in our religious school, have a life cycle event performed, and so on, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org or call 520-276-5675. Our services are live and on Facebook. Lots to do at Beit Simcha. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, the newest and fastest growing Jewish community and congregation in southern Arizona in its exciting beginning years. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18 @gmail.com. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in North America, according to Moment Magazine, over 175,000 downloads on Podbean. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
History is something that Jews live in. I mean, our holidays are all historically related, nearly. Purim's coming up this week. Pesach is the history feast. So much of our experience of Judaism is connected to history, but history is not exactly high on the list of priorities for what many of our contemporaries and certainly younger Americans seem to know much about. Clearly affects everything. Ukraine proves that. Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, you make a good point. It's also a sad point, which is, you know, during my many years of teaching at the University of Arizona, students, when they wanted to dismiss something as being utterly unimportant and irrelevant, they would say, oh, that's history. Like, you couldn't use a worse word or a more insulting word than history. And that was very revealing because they had that attitude towards history in part because they had never studied it properly and in part because they had no sense of how to apply history to the world in which they lived. And I see this time and again with many situations, but the most recent crisis in Ukraine, even from people who should know much better, there's no real sense of what Ukraine is, even where it is, what its historic relationship to Russia has been, why not only Putin but many other Russians might take a position of denying that it's a separate country with a separate culture, et cetera, et cetera. The facts are very simple, and I think we've talked about this on this show before. The Kievan Rus, which existed long before any kind of modern Russian state, that goes back to like the 9th and 10th centuries.
Counts of Kiev, right?
And it had like this high level of civilization and culture, not only paintings and icons and religion and poetry, but also gorgeous architecture. I mean, there's a dozen monuments, at least in Kiev, that date back to that period when Russia was just a mud swamp and a forest. Moscow was nothing.
Right.
For hundreds of years. Yeah. So the idea that somehow Ukraine has no independent existence or is derivative is just absurd.
Yeah, it's stunning for that. Well, of course, you know, dictators like to rewrite history and create their own false narratives. But this is so counterfactual. And yet I don't think, I don't know, do 5% of Americans know anything about Ukraine except what they've just seen on the news the last couple of weeks?
Right. We should maybe next week break down some of why American Jews have so many mistaken notions about Ukraine and about their grandparents who came from quote-unquote Russia. Which is also wrong in most cases.
Most cases.
So yeah. Let's maybe put that on the docket for next week.
Okay, that sounds good, Tom. We'll talk then.
I look forward to it.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie new, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Jake's walking in Manhattan, and a guy runs up to him and says, "Hey, mister, I got an elephant for you. I'll sell it to you for just $500. Jake replies, "What am I going to do with an elephant? I live in a two-room apartment." The guy replies, "I'll tell you what. I'll sell you two for $750. Jake says, "Now you're talking." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish, just for you. You should live and be well, and that was just ridiculous enough for Purim, wasn't it? And now a word of Torah. This week's portion is the second of the Book of Leviticus, Tzav, section that establishes the rules for the various sacrifices to be offered in the tabernacle in the wilderness, the Mishkan, and later in the temple in Jerusalem. There are many different types of sacrifices commanded, burnt offerings, guilt offerings, sin offerings, and so on. But one group of sacrificial offerings stands out above all, the offerings of peace, the Zevach Shlamim. And among this higher category of offerings, one rises higher still, the Zevach Todah, the Thanksgiving offering. The rabbis thought so highly of thanksgiving to God, they are quoted in the Talmud saying that when the Messiah comes, all sacrifices will have completed their mission. All will be discontinued with just one exception, the thanksgiving offering. That sacrifice will last forever. Even in a perfect world, we must remember to give thanks, to be grateful for what we do have. As we move through the holiday of Purim and then on to Pesach, we do well to remember that gratitude for what we have is both the most essential of all religious motivations and the hardest to keep in mind. If we each can take a moment today to write, email, text, or phone our thanks to someone important in our lives, well, we may begin to renew this great commitment our Torah portion of Tzav creates. We have so much for which we need to be grateful. And if we can also take a moment today to thank God for what we have already and to be more conscious of those who have less and help them, well, we may begin to make this a better world. For thanksgiving should not lead us to complacency, but instead to humility, to gratitude, and to action. When we return on To Jewish, our guest, Aaron Lieberman, who started the educational nonprofit Jumpstart in his dorm room and brought it to national prominence, then created the entrepreneurial education company Oscillero and led it to great success, and is now focused on education here in Arizona, Aaron Lieberman will return for more conversation right here on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett engaged in high-level diplomacy last week in an effort to serve as an intermediator between Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky and Russian Tsar Vladimir Putin. Israel is one of the few countries in the world with good relations with both Ukraine and Russia. Bennett, who has little previous international diplomatic experience, cleared his efforts with the U.S. and European powers. He met with Putin for 3 hours, then flew to Berlin and met with German Chancellor Scholz, then spoke to Zelensky extensively. While making no promises, Bennett certainly did his level best to create a channel for direct conversation and raised his own international profile. There are many Jews in Ukraine. Estimates range from 50,000 to perhaps as high as 400,000 before the brutal Russian invasion, and there are perhaps still as many as 400,000 Jews in Russia itself, while Israel has welcomed over 1 million immigrants from the former Soviet Union, including Ukraine, in the waves of Aliyah since the fall of the communist regimes in the early 1990s. As the humanitarian crisis grows ever more severe in Ukraine, with millions of refugees fleeing the Russian war of aggression and Russian artillery, missiles, and bombs targeting civilians, Jewish organizations have rushed to provide funds, material, and evacuation to Jews and other refugees. Bennett said Israel has a moral obligation to try to negotiate between Ukraine and Russia. He would not elaborate on the status of his own talks with Putin and Zelensky. I returned from Moscow and Berlin, Bennett said. I went there to assist the dialogue between all the sides, of course, with the blessing and encouragement of all players. Israel occupies an unusual, almost unique position among Western countries because of its close relations with both Ukraine and Russia. Zelensky, of course, is Jewish. He had previously asked Israel to serve as an intermediary. Israel has declined to condemn Russia quite as forthrightly as other Western countries since the beginning of the war. Though Israel declined to sign a UN Security Council resolution condemning Russia, it did sign on to a resolution by the UN General Assembly condemning Russia's invasion of Ukraine a couple days later. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the most senior elected Jewish official in U.S. history, invoked the Holocaust in making the case for an assistance package for Ukraine. There's a Holocaust going on, Schumer, the New York Democrat said as he was wrapping up negotiations for the massive $1.5 trillion spending bill congressional leaders unveiled last week. The package includes about $14 billion in assistance for Ukraine as the country faces down the brutal, aggressive invasion launched last month by Russian President Vladimir Putin. When you see that people are lined up on buses just to leave a conflict zone and Putin's artillery shells the buses, that is just below humanity, below dignity, Schumer said. We need to give the brave Ukrainian fighting forces, who are doing much better than anyone ever imagined, the arms they need, whether it be javelins or stingers. The Israeli Holocaust Museum and Historical Authority, Yad Vashem, is suspending its philanthropic partnership with Roman Abramovich as the Russian-Israeli oligarch is hit with sanctions in the United Kingdom aimed at isolating Russian President Vladimir Putin and people close to him. Abramovich, who made billions in the Russian oil industry but has denied he was ever part of Putin's inner circle, was in the process of donating tens of millions of dollars to Yad Vashem. British court documents have concluded that Abramovich has had privileged access to Putin over the years. Yad Vashem has faced blowback over the donation, and the Israeli news reports claim it had lobbied against sanctions for Abramovich in the days since the invasion of Ukraine. In light of recent developments, Yad Vashem has decided to suspend its strategic partnership with Roman Abramovich, the center said last week. That announcement came just hours after the UK froze the assets and banned travel of Abramovich and six other Russian oligarchs. Abramovich, worth around $12 billion, has reportedly donated hundreds of millions of dollars to Jewish institutions and causes in his native Russia. Recent years, he's spent time in Israel, where he owns multiple properties, including the most expensive estate ever sold in Israel. Abramovich also donated $100 million to a group working to bolster Jewish settlements in East Jerusalem. The asset freeze also puts the ownership transfer of England's famed Chelsea soccer team, which Abramovich owns, but said last week he would sell, in limbo. Abramovich had set up a major campaign through the club aimed at combating anti-Semitism in soccer. Also last week, fellow Russian-Israeli energy businessman Leonid Nevzlin renounced his own Russian citizenship, saying everything Putin touches dies. Nevzlin was one of the first oligarchs to leave Russia in the early 2000s in response to Putin's crackdown on political dissent. Israel has ignored Russia's attempts to extradite him. I'm against the war, I'm against the occupation, I'm against the genocide of the Ukrainian people, Nevzlin said. In non-Ukrainian news, Israeli President Isaac Herzog visited Ankara last week to speak with Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a meeting that represents a significant thawing of relations between Israel and Turkey. Diplomacy between the two had been practically frozen since the Mavi Marmara incident, when Israeli military forces killed eight Turkish citizens and one Turkish American aboard a ship that was attempting to break Israel's blockade of the Gaza Strip back in 2010. I believe this historic visit will be a turning point in relations between Turkey and Israel. Strengthening relations with the State of Israel has great value for our country, Erdogan said. We will not agree on everything, and the relationship between Israel and Turkey has certainly known ups and downs, Herzog said, speaking after Erdogan, but we shall try to restart our relations. I hope that in the wake of my visit, serious process will begin with Turkey and that ultimately we will see, I hope, progress in our relations and positive results. And that's the news of Jews around the world.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470 to speak to a family advisor at Evergreen. Call 520-888-7470. We are delighted to welcome back the Two Jewish, our guests this morning. Aaron Lieberman is a highly accomplished entrepreneur, beginning with Jumpstart, which has helped something like 100,000 kids make tremendous gains in their educational experience. And then Oscillero, which we'll talk about now, served in the Arizona legislature, running for governor about, by the way. Good morning and welcome back to Two Jewish, Aaron.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
So you did Jumpstart. Tell us sort of how that moved you into further entrepreneurial work in creating Oscillero.
Yeah, well, I spent almost 10 years from the time I started at college to my last year as CEO at Jumpstart. And we would place our college students into Head Start programs, mostly preschool programs all across the United States. And I saw that some were amazing and some were really struggling. And I got interested in the idea of how could I do something to improve the quality of those Head Start programs. So we recruited an incredible successor CEO at Jumpstart. I transitioned to a board role there for several years. And then I launched Oscillero Learning with the real goal of trying to dramatically increase the quality of Head Start programs. And it was kind of a similar story where we started in, you know, one area working very hard, and the thing just grew and grew and grew. Today, the company impacts about 40,000 children every single day.
The Head Start program, really important program. Why were some succeeding and some not succeeding?
You know, that's a great question, and it really gets down to just the local organization and the local leadership that were leading it. At the time, you know, like anything, there's kind of a distribution and it can be pretty variable. The federal government got more focused on quality during the last 20 years in particular, and started to say, hey, if you're not getting over this bar, if you're not doing this good of a job, we're going to find someone else to be the Head Start provider here. And that created a huge opportunity for organizations that were really focused on improving quality, either to provide the services themselves, and Oscillero does that in about 50 child care centers across four states, or help other Head Start programs that really wanted to improve their quality. And Oscillero does that too under the name Shine Early Learning in probably 30 other states all across the United States, where we're using the tools and the technology and the curriculum and everything we figured out in our own Head Start programs to impact others.
You know, getting metrics for kids' accomplishment is notoriously complicated, particularly with younger kids. Were there technological developments that helped you do that?
Yeah, you're spot on. It's really hard to get good measurements of how kids are learning at that age. What we really focused on was what are the indicators of the processes that we will know produce big outcomes for kids. So are we getting all of the screenings done to make sure that all of the kids are getting their health checks and are healthy and well and have all of their immunizations? Are our teachers regularly meeting and planning and, you know, the individualized curriculum, all of those pieces? And then we layered on top of that research from outside evaluators who would come in and sample. They'd take and randomly choose 8 kids in every classroom across the company. And over a course of 3 years, that's where we demonstrated really clearly that the kids in our programs were making gains at about 2.5 times the national average, which spending the same amount of money as everybody else. And that to this day is honestly one of my proudest accomplishments, that focus on quality that we know led to real changes in outcomes for the kids who are participating.
I want to go into something personal. When you were young, you had some challenges. You had a speech impediment. How did that impact your understanding of kids later?
You know, it's funny. I'm the youngest of five kids. I'm the only one.
By the way, I think you've overcome the speech impediment by now. I think.
I'm doing okay. I have great health.
Doing pretty well.
In third grade. But you know, I couldn't say my R's. And for a kid named Aaron Lieberman, that's a tough one. But, you know, like anything else, I got the support early in second and third grade at Madison High. It's right down the street from where I went to school. And I tell people it's really true. The best teacher I ever had in my life was my third grade teacher at Madison Heights. And she said she wanted me to give this speech. We were like planting a tree for the hostages. Your older members of your audience will remember the whole Iran hostage thing.
Yeah, sure.
And she wanted me to give the talk.
Tie a yellow ribbon around the tree and all that stuff. Yeah,
exactly. And that I had been working on saying my R's and been getting speech therapy, you know, during the day and all that stuff. And I couldn't believe she had asked me. And I was nervous, and I must have been a slow news day, because when I got to school that day, there was the news truck who was going to come to cover the speech, which was just like a nightmare for me at the time. But I got up there, and with her support and belief and everything else, I was kind of able to perfectly get through it and really say my R's and say my name, and, you know, in that way. And there was no turning back from that point. That was a real, real milestone for me.
Look, the Jewish concept is Talmud Torah keneged kulam. You know, the study of Torah exceeds everything. Really, learning is always such a central Jewish principle. Where do you see challenges in our society now in our commitment to education?
Yeah, you know, when I was in the legislature, I was on the education committee, so I can really speak to this in terms of the state of Arizona. And I was also on the appropriations committee. And I see there's a couple of great challenges. Most people don't realize that Arizona is second only to Mississippi in terms of the percentage of our kids in K-12 who are low income or living in poverty. So we have a lot of kids, and it's very well established. Low income kids, on average, they need additional resources, ideally smaller class sizes, additional counselors, additional help to help them get caught up. And we really haven't been providing that in any meaningful way in Arizona. And that kind of starts with high quality preschool, where we spend almost zero state dollars on providing that. And in fact, we've reduced our state commitment over the last 10 years. So I think that's a big gap where we could do more. I think we need universal pre-K for every four-year-old in the state would be a good start. And I think the other thing is just in our classrooms, we've got 2,000 classrooms without a teacher in front of them. And we have some of the largest class sizes in the United States. And both of those are a function of low pay. You know, we don't pay. I had actually someone in Tucson I was talking to say their child studied to be a teacher, wanted to teach in the Tucson public schools, graduated, looked at the pay and said, I can't make this work, and literally moved to Colorado. I think we should get our teacher pay up to 25th in the country instead of 49th.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy to say, oh, a great goal is to be, you know, only in the bottom half.
Yeah. Well, I always joke, normally I like to be first or second in anything, but in teacher pay, if we could get to 25th, that would raise the average teacher pay in Arizona about $10,000, from about $47,000 to about $57,000. And I think that would be enough to draw people back in, keep teachers who are training here, staying here, and really let us start to make that investment in all of the kids in Arizona that we really need to be making.
I mean, I know of fantastic teachers who've left to go into high tech, other jobs that pay literally double what they were making. They were great teachers. We talk about the importance of education a lot. There's a lot of lip service paid to it, and people have all kinds of excuses for why we don't put resources there. It's not just true in Arizona. I think it's, you know, it's not like teachers are the best paid profession in America anywhere. Why do you think that is?
You know, it's tough. But by the way, Rabbi Cohen, it's not just going to high tech. I early on heard the story of a teacher in Arizona who would skim pools in the summer. One year didn't come back to teaching because he was making more money skimming dead bugs out of pools than he was teaching the net future generations of Arizona. I mean, that's how low our teacher pay has been historically.
And in the summer in Arizona, working pools.
Exactly. Yeesh. Exactly. But to your question of why does this persist, I'll tell you there's a real disconnect in my experience between what regular Arizonans want and what the legislature does and gets involved with. The polling on increasing the investment in our schools is 65-70% of Arizonans, broadly. And I tell people all the time, most of us love Arizona. I do. Wouldn't you love it even more if you could say, wow, this is an amazing state and we have incredible public schools, instead of having to be kind of sheepish and embarrassed about our investment? That's actually what Arizonans want. And there's just been a big disconnect with our legislative leaders in particular in not passing a budget that reflects that to get us to where we really need to be.
I want to talk about another educational issue. Charter schools, which are very prominent in Arizona, really all around the nation now, receive public school funding. It's an interesting dynamic. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. You know, we've made a lot of progress on making sure our charter schools are closely evaluated, particularly on the financial side. There used to be very little controls. People could really rip off the state. That has been really tamped down by efforts at the legislature and the charter school board to make some good progress there. We still have some areas where we need to do more work on that they absolutely need more oversight, particularly the ones that have a large central office that another entity they contract with. We don't know what happens when they contract with that other entity. But by and large, you know, charter schools have been popular because they've offered folks in Arizona an opportunity to get something unique or different based on their individual children. And honestly, so have our public schools. I mean, we've seen many district schools offer different things in different areas. And I think giving parents choices in the public, you know, school world of where they can send their kid is a positive thing and has actually been pretty positive for Arizona. It can be exhausting for parents, I know personally, because you kind of navigate and try to find that right mix of school for your child. But I think, you know, overall, it's been quite positive for children and families. And if you look at the outcomes from Arizona's public schools, our overall public schools, you know, a million of our kids are in regular district schools, about 250,000 are in charter schools. But if you look at all of them together, we actually do pretty well on the outcomes test, the NAEP, where you look, you know, apples to apples, which is amazing given how low funding it is. And I think the ability to match that kid with that right school, you know, district or charter is a big part of that.
You hear an argument made sometimes, oh, you know, Arizona doesn't spend very much on schools or on public education, but our kids do pretty well. And the reason we're not doing better is because we have so many second language kids. There's all kinds of different explanations given. Would you call them excuses?
Yeah. You know, again, on some level, we have something to be proud of, which is the outcomes and the results our underfunded situation, our underfunded system is producing. I just believe fundamentally, and I've seen it in my own life, you know, zip code or where you start is not destiny. At Ocelera, we saw in Head Start, you have to enroll the highest need, lowest income kids, many English language learners, and we saw them make incredible gains and really, really take off. And it just gets to, you know, being in a system or a setting that has really high expectations and adults who really believe in kids and ultimately are being kind of held accountable to that as well. But if we don't have adults in classrooms, if we don't have teachers in the front of a classroom, there's no educational model that works. Everything is dependent on a consistent adult in front of that classroom. And for 2,000 classrooms in the state of Arizona right now, we don't have that person there. Until we solve that problem, we can't make progress on a lot of these other areas as well.
Do you think that there should be free public preschools?
I do. I think especially for four-year-olds is a great place to start. We know it makes a lifetime of difference for kids, particularly for low-income kids. And this is the thing that's so powerful about it is, it actually saves the state money in the long run. Kids are less likely to be retained in a grade. They're less likely to need special ed placements. They're more likely over their life to have a job and pay taxes because they're working, less likely to be involved with criminal justice system. There are a few things that have been better studied than high quality pre-K and the lifelong impact that it has. And that's the type of investment we should be making as a state, because ultimately that's going to help more Arizona kids be successful.
All right, so Aaron, I want you to tell us how we can fix religious schools and synagogues in America too. Can you help us with that?
Well,
please?
That's a tough one, and that's more your lane than mine. I will share with you when my son was complaining to me about having to go to religious school. My dad happened to be over, And I said, listen, I went to religious school. I hated it too. I get it. I was like, Dad, did you like going to religious school? I said, oh, it's the worst. And I was like, see, it's like three generations who have struggled with. So I hope someone can, I know, I hope someone can figure it out. I will say, I think like so many Jewish people, you know, I've been so proud to raise my children in a synagogue with an active, caring community around it. My mom actually helped found, she was the first president of Temple Emmanuel in Tempe, and that was a great community when we were very young before we moved up to Phoenix. But there is something about wanting your kids to have that Jewish connection. If someone could figure out how to make that high-quality, engaging religious education, that would be awesome. And I think you're just the guy to do it, Rabbi Cajon.
Thank you very much, Aaron. Your check's in the mail. I appreciate that. I want to just mention you're running for governor now, and we don't typically have candidates on. We just don't. It's part of our kind of non-sectarian approach to politics at Too Jewish. But I want to say, you know, your work in education is inspirational, and people want to find out more about you. Where can they go to find out more about Aaron Lieberman?
If you just put Aaron Lieberman into Google, you'll get right to the right place. But Aaron, the number 4az.com is an easy place to find out more info. And, you know, I have been on this journey. I always wanted to try to impact nearly a million low-income kids and their families. I'm getting pretty close between Auxiliary Learning and Jumpstart. But there's 1.25 million kids in our Arizona public schools every single day. And for me, you know, politics is about helping people and helping more people get what we all want, that kind of opportunity to pursue the American dream. And it's kind of a through line for me of all the stuff I've done in my career. But I appreciate you having me on, and great to get a chance to visit.
Me too, and best of luck. And by the way, Mazel Tov, your daughter is at Yale, I understand, your alma mater. Yet another Jewish heritage, if you could send your kid to where you went to college.
Yeah, absolutely.
Aaron, thanks so much. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
We are the soul of Tucson. We are your neighbors and friends. Our commitment to provide the very best relies on the finest products and services you, our community, has to offer. Together, we make Tucson thrive. When we win, you win. Casino del Sol, the soul of Tucson.
Enterprise of the Pasquayaki tribe.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Cohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Deborah Meyer, founder and CEO of Moving Traditions, a nonprofit that's helping transform the way Jewish organizations, schools, and camps address gender and personal identity for young people. Critical areas right now. Don't forget, join us at Congregation Beit Simcha in person every Friday night for services in Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning too. 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. for services, Torah reading, and Kiddush, all live in person and available on our Facebook page. And definitely, don't miss our fabulous Megillah reading and party on Purim this Wednesday night at 6:30 p.m. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org for more information. Our playout this morning on Too Jewish comes from our pre-Purim musical preview. Festival's coming up this week. The song is called Kichlot Yeni, a Sephardic melody from Tangier, located, just across the strait from the Rock of Gibraltar and Spain in Morocco. It's a clever medieval complaint about a host who serves watered-down wine on Purim this Wednesday and Thursday, coming right up. My friends, may you have a Chag Sameach, a Purim filled with light and especially joy, and unwatered wine, and a Shavua Tov, a week we pray for this troubled world of peace.
Shaftu shirim kifi sharim male mayim, male mayim. Lechem la'ochel echidam morech machal echidila Nitbahim lifne ha'mitan mayim, ha'mitan mayim.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.